Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Glad that everyone could tune in and join us this week, whether you're listening live or you're listening to download later on. We definitely are appreciative to you joining us this evening. We're going to start off the show as we normally do, starting off this week with the trend lines report from DAT. And not sure how everybody has managed. I know last week was at the very beginning of the pipeline issues, and we were having issues with disruption in diesel fuel. So I'm not be interested to know how everybody handled that over the previous week. I myself ran into a couple of times, a couple of TAs and Petros didn't have any fuel, had to go off of my traditional network and luckily lucked up and caught some fuel over at the Love's, which is not where I normally not a chain that I normally fuel up at, but when you're in these situations, you got to do what you got to do. We have to make adjustments and do what we have to do. So diesel prices, interestingly enough, we did see an increase in the price of diesel fuel on the national average, jumped by 1.6 percentage points. So we are now showing a national average price for diesel fuel sitting at $3.19 per gallon nationwide. With the exception, and jumping into the report, markets settled slightly in the week after the road check inspection blitz, with the exception of flatbed sector. The truckload spot market showed signs of cooling down last week. The van load-to-truck ratio fell, while the reefer ratio tumbled following the surge in volume associated with Mother's Day in the week prior. Flatbeds continue to break records throughout the spot market. Rates now around 11 cents per mile higher than the contract rates are showing. The last time that we saw this level of capacity tightness was back in June of 2018. And let's take a look and see how each segment was performing over the previous week, starting off with the dry van segment. We are showing that starting out up in the upper northeastern corridor, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $233. Moving down ever so slightly to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $264. We come back up to the Midwest, we're showing an outbound spot market average rate of $2.80 per mile. That beats the nation. Moving now to the south central region of the United States, we're showing that spot market outbound rate is showing an average of $2.41 per mile. And coming out of the west coast, that average is coming in at $2.71. Shifting over and taking a look at how those flatbed rates were performing, starting out up in the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.93. Moving now to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate at $3.28 per mile. Jumping back up into the Midwest, we're showing that the outbound spot market rate is $3.34 per mile. That also leads the nation, the Midwest, once again. Dropping back down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing that outbound spot market rate for flatbeds coming in at $2.89, and wrapping up for flatbeds coming out of the West Coast, we're showing that outbound spot market rate at $2.59. Moving along, jumping over into the temperature controlled or the reefer portion of the report, we're showing that the outbound spot market rate checking in at $2.54 up in the northeastern portion of the United States. Coming back down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion, we're showing that outbound rate for reefers is at $2.88. And once we have a new leader on the board. But coming out of the Midwest, we're showing outbound rates at $3.16. And coming out of the South Central region, we're showing an outbound rate of $2.83 per mile. And the new leader coming out of the West Coast was showing an average outbound spot market rate for reefers checking in at $3.18 per mile. That's 2 cents higher than the Midwest. So the West Coast is taking the lead as far as the average outbound spot market rate when it comes to reefers. And with that being said, and without any further ado, let me go ahead and bring in my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
I tell you, it's been one eventful week on my end as far as some personal stuff, but we've been definitely trying to it's been like herding cats over this way for this week. Interesting to say.
Sorry to hear that. You know, sometimes we have to have those dark moments so we appreciate the sunshine.
Absolutely. So we had a little bit of a snafu, a little bit behind the scenes, but we were able to get everything rectified and get everything up and on board. So you want to, I don't want to belabor the point or waste a whole lot of time, but you want to tell us about our special guest that we're bringing on this evening?
Yes, I'm thrilled to have Bruce Outridge. He is the brilliant creator of Lead Pedal Radio. This is a radio station, internet radio station, geared for the trucking community. And Bruce has had 25 years behind the wheel of a truck, been an owner-operator. I was invited on his show last week, Truck Talk, and the hour blew by, and Bruce and I agreed, you know what, he's got to come on this show just so we can continue this discussion, because, my God, we hit every subject possible. And, of course, you know, an hour isn't long enough. And that was actually when we were setting this up, and I was setting it up yesterday. I was thinking, geez, I'm wondering if we should try for an hour and a half. And I thought, well, let's not push it. I don't know what everybody's schedule is like. So we're going to – Bruce, I want to welcome you to the show on behalf of Rico and I. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm excited, and I'm willing to stay as long as you're willing to have me, which could be 10 minutes or 2 hours, whatever you – we've eaten dinner, so we're good on this side. Rico, I feel sorry for you, buddy. Two Canadians ganging up on you tonight. I don't know how well it's going to go.
Well, it's all good.
Chuck and I are problem. Chuck and I
– We definitely appreciate the perspective that you guys can bring to your down here. To us down here in the South.
Yeah, well, Chuck and I are about half an hour from each other, so if we weren't in a damn lockdown, we'd be doing this at a bar somewhere. I don't know where we'd be doing it. It'd be a lot more fun.
That would be. I don't know how the listeners would take it with you and I slurring our words.
You guys are still kind of shut down up that way, or they haven't begun to relax anything just yet?
Our Canadian government's being so safe, we're never going to be out of it.
Well said.
Yeah.
Our number's that high. You know what? Our government did a lousy job getting needles into arms up here. And because of it, they allowed international flights from all over. And people were coming in from, you know, you name it, Europe and Asia, all over Africa, you name it, and South and Central America, the islands, you name it. And they're bringing different strains of the disease with them. So that's why it got so out of hand.
Yeah. Well, so. It started years ago, though. It started, you know, if you think back to probably, well, Chuck, you and I were talking about the other day, the 80s and stuff. When they started getting rid of all the manufacturing because it's cheaper to go to, you know, wherever to get it from, that's the problem we're in now, right? The other countries that are way 100%. Ahead have their own manufacturing. We have to wait on everybody to deliver, and there's a driver shortage, so we can't even get them here. So that's part of the problem, right?
Yeah. It's true. We stopped manufacturing in Canada. We manufacture very little. And what we've done here is we've outsourced all of that, those roles to third world countries, Asia and South America, Mexico, where there's cheaper labor. And, this is the result. And we can't get things. the strangest thing now, and I don't know if you're having the same issue in the U.S. I know you are with cars, but just as far as getting parts for lawnmowers and well, lumber, I think that's on both sides of the border, getting furniture. I've spoken to a few people that can't get furniture or appliances. Everything is back ordered. So,
right.
You know, that's something we've never seen in Canada before, and we don't make furniture, or we don't make a lot of furniture in Canada, certainly don't make a lot of appliances. And, you know, there's lineups everywhere. I went to the hardware store today to buy a hose. I needed 100 feet of hose, and you have to call ahead. I got there, and there were 15-20 vehicles ahead of me. You kind of go to a outside pickup area. Well, after waiting there for 15 minutes, I thought, you know what? My time is too valuable. I don't need to hose that badly. And but that's the sort of thing that we're subjected to with this lockdown right now. It's something we're not used to.
So I find the customer service has gone way down in this lockdown. As soon as they do that, I did the same thing. I had to get a computer part the other day, and it was the same thing, you know, 10 minutes waiting. I had to order it the day before. I paid for it a day before, but when I get there, I got to, like, do a million codes and wait outside. And I just find the customer service is really – you wouldn't do that when anybody can go to any store. But because we've already – you've already got our money and we're already locked down, you know we have to wait for it because we've already paid for it, so we're going to wait. But I'm sure that's not what Rico wanted to talk about tonight with my a big box store.
No, it's quite all right. I'm interested to know how did you guys, Chuck and Bruce, I don't know if you can speak to this or not, but I'm interested to know, did you guys see any effects from this whole pipeline situation that would affect us down here on this part of in this part of the world? So anyway. We had quite a bit of disruption, ran into a few, like I said, I ran on my travels. I just travel back and forth between, Georgia and North Carolina. So I'm going through South Carolina. So, the TAs and petrols that I came across along my route, most of them were out of fuel. And I'm not sure if they were just that plugged into, the Colonial Pipeline or whatever. Obviously they must have been. But it seems as if the Loves, I don't know, they must be have a different source or whatever, but they seem to have a few all throughout the time, and they didn't have any when TA did get some fuel, when TA Petro did get some fuel at a couple of different locations, they were doing they were only allowing you to get $200 worth.
Jeez. Which doesn't take you far, right?
So I'm interested to see what did you guys have any effects of that whole situation up that way, and if so, you know, how did you guys handle it? How are you guys dealing with it?
No, not
Go ahead,
that
Chuck.
I know of up here. No, we didn't have any of that. Our threat is a pipeline that goes under Lake Michigan that the governor of Michigan is talking about shutting down, or she said she is going to shut it down. And we talked a little bit about it last week, Rico. I thought they had, because there was a drop dead date, and she hasn't shut it off yet. But that's a bigger threat to Ontario, Quebec, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania than the Colonial Pipeline, which affected you people more in the south, on the south coast.
Yeah. Chuck, I'm not sure if you may know this better than I do, but I think I'm by Toronto here. Chuck and I are both by the Toronto area, Rico, and any company up here, if we fuel up here, we can pretty well turn a 500-mile trip back here. So I can run to Chicago and back without getting fuel. I might be kind of spitting it at the end, but I could probably get back without buying fuel. So I could get back in and out of Canada. Anybody going farther than that, maybe the 700 down to the Florida Keys, something like that, is going to need fuel. So for probably, I'm going to say probably 70% of our carriers probably are just running out of their yard and haven't had that issue. You know, only the people who are running longer, I would say. And Chuck, you probably have more people on the road that you could talk to that more than I could.
You know, you're right. And most of the industry in Ontario is like that. It's that 500-mile spin, like it's 500 miles there, 500 miles back, because the Toronto, miraculously enough, Toronto is 500 miles from most of the big U.S. cities, going from Baltimore all the way to Chicago. So, you know, you've got up and down Baltimore, Boston, New York, Newark, Philly, then over to Dayton, Cincy, Indianapolis, Chicago. That's a 500-mile area. So everybody can pretty much, especially with the trucks we have now, they're getting, you know, 7 miles per gallon, a lot of them. Some of them are even doing better with the newer trucks. They can do that. So they don't have the they don't have the issues quite often with fuel. And so ones that are going further, that are going to, you know, down to Florida or maybe even going California way, that could have problems here and there with fuel.
Yeah, and most carriers up here probably aren't even interested in running, unless it's part of their regular laneage where they're a big company. Most of them don't want to run past 500 miles. Most of the people I deal with, they're going, no, we don't really make any money running farther than that, you know, unless a customer is really willing to pay. So they don't focus on those areas. They might get the odd trip, but most of them are running. I know for myself, I ran Chicago a lot. I ran a lot of New York, New Jersey, a lot of Boston. Every once in a while, I did Texas and Florida, but it wasn't part of a, it wasn't a big thing for us. Most of the, you know, our main steel hub was basically the Carolinas. And other than that, we were all staying kind of within that area. So most companies probably haven't felt it from a Canadian perspective if they've got their own fuel source in their yard or something like that.
Yeah, and you know what? Also cool in Ontario, there's so much traffic between here and Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, connected to the automotive industry that that keeps thousands of trucks going. Now, that may change with the onset of electric cars, because unfortunately for a lot of those trucking companies that are tied to the automotive industry and the suppliers, an electric car apparently doesn't need nearly the amount of components that a gas or diesel operated car does. So that's going
okay,
to be a
so
real
I was,
game changer.
So I go for a walk every morning, and I don't really pay attention to electric cars because I'm not really into them or anything. But I walked by this house, and they had and it looked weird because it looked like your garden hose is plugged into your car. And I'm walking, and I'm going, you know, wait till the kids get onto this. Like, the kids are not onto electric cars yet, but wait till they start figuring out that as a good prank, we're just going to unplug your electric car during the night while you're sleeping. And you come out going to work and you've got no juice to get to work. I'm waiting for that one to happen. I'm not suggesting anybody should try that, but I'm just suggesting that it seems fairly open. This person had an extension cord plugged into whatever you do, and then it was plugged into their, it looked like their gas tank is where it was plugged into, and that's how they were charging it up. And I'm thinking, it's not too much. If the power goes out overnight, how many times does that happen?
Yes.
You're done.
Yep.
You know, if somebody comes and plays a prank and says, oh, I'm just going to unplug this thing here, you know, you're done. Like, to me, it's all, see, I don't know if you keep gas, I don't know anything about electric cars, but it seemed to me like there were some easy ways to really mess up somebody's day.
Yeah. Good point. But you know what? Another point you included in that, which makes a lot of sense, Bruce, is power does go out. We had, if you remember, about six, seven years ago, we had a huge power outage in southern Ontario where we live at our farm. Power was out for 5 or 6 days. And you talk about living like our pioneer ancestors. That was a whole new thing for us. Luckily, we had a little, it wasn't that cold. It was Christmas time, and we had a little wood stove that kept the chill off the house. But, you know, it's an eye-opener.
Rico probably wants to say something, because Rico hasn't figured out that we've got lots of people who are used to being the host. We haven't. Rico, feel free to tell me to shut up. It's okay. I'm used to being the host.
So
I'm not used
right.
to
it's
like.
Quite all right.
I'll never be on this show again, I'm sure.
I'd like to get a little bit more information on yourself, Bruce. You know, if you don't mind, give us a little bit of an overview or tell us a little bit more about what it is that you do and some of the things that you got going on over on your side or whatever with the show that you do.
There's only 40 minutes left in the show, Rico. I don't know if I can pull that off. But let me see what I can do. Okay. So I've been 40 years in the trucking industry. 25 of those behind the wheel. The rest of them were either in management of a fleet or right now in media for the industry. I started when I was 17 years old in the working with Atlas Van Line. So I've been working as a bed bugger my first 7 years of the industry, and then I switched over to freight. I now do podcasting. I'm an artist as well, so I do caricatures and cartoons a lot for the industry and a lot for weddings and those kind of events. We have our podcast, the Lead Pedal Podcast, which has been going on for 6 years, something like 640 episodes of that one. And then we've got the radio station, Lead Pedal Radio, which Chuck mentioned started last year. I have a television show here in Burlington, Ontario called Inspiring Youth. It's on the Halton Network, which I showcase ambitious youth in the community. And then I have another blog, which is for artists, the business side and careers for artists. So lots going on, lots of fun, never a dull day in this area, but it's always fun. And I hopefully people, I really enjoy the industry. I am still like a kid at a candy store at a truck show. I consider myself a chrome junkie. I just, the big Peterbilts and all that stuff is what I used to drive, and I still love them. I'm still have my license. I stopped driving professionally 14 years ago. So that's where we are now, behind the mic, but still enjoying the industry, still feeling connected and still thankful that, because I was, someone told me not to become in the trucking industry. I was pumping gas and I was 17 years old. I dropped out of high school at the age, I was in grade 11. And I said, I'm going to get into the trucking industry. And the guy said, don't do that, Bruce. He said, I tried it for 2 years, didn't make any money. Thank God I didn't listen to him, because there's no more gas stations that actually pump gas. And I've had an awesome, awesome career 40 years out, right? So there you go.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what made you gas? What got you into that?
Well, I started in 2009. I was a fleet supervisor for a chemical company here in Burlington. I started a driver there. I worked there 13 years. I ended up being dispatch and then, the fleet supervisor for a couple locations, and it's the corporate life. And my plans were to be kind of the manager for Canada, if you will. And everything was kind of going that way. It looked really good. I'm a very good entrepreneur. I consider myself a bad manager. People might argue that, but I expect people to do their jobs, and I don't do well with all of that stress. So I always want things cleaned up. I want them to be running well. And at that time I was getting very frustrated with the corporate environment. The company was awesome, but it was just any corporate environment has its stresses. I just decided that I wanted to kind of be on my own. And I thought, I've got enough knowledge of the trucking industry. My art was doing well. I thought I could probably do, cartoons and illustration for magazines. That's where I thought I would be. And I was about to, I think I would have had a heart attack if I stayed there. Like, that's how high the level of stress was where I was. Kind of fell into that job. And so I quit. So I quit and I thought I'll start an art business. And I started my art business right when everyone's going digital. So I don't know anything about digital, and everybody's going digital, and they started that. And fast forward a couple of years later, as you guys probably know, because you're both entrepreneurs, that you get into business, it's fun, and then you get into a slow time where, okay, now what do I do with myself? And I thought in 2009, I go, I have all of this industry experience. And I'd gone back to school and finished my school and all that, and I said, why don't I get into training? So I had started working with some of the truck driving schools up here and doing some training. And I thought, I'm going to start a video series for truck drivers just to give back my knowledge. I don't know if you remember this, Chuck. I don't know how much of this you do. And Rico, you may, I'm not sure what's happening in the States, but for a while there was a big push on training your fleet through video. It was like, buy this video program and you can have your guys do this at home and all of that kind of stuff, right? There was a period of about 3 years where that was the hot topic. People were coming out with platforms, but it wasn't really taking off. Like, guys are going, I don't want to watch videos all weekend while I'm at home for your training or whatever, right? But companies thought that was a good idea. And I was thinking of doing a video series, and I thought, well, drivers, are moving. They're not watching video, hopefully driving for 11, 13 hours. And I found out about podcasts. I knew nothing about it. I said, that is the medium for me. And I just started. I just said, okay, I go buy a mic and I'm sitting in my room talking to myself. My wife goes, who are you talking to? I go, the guy with all the right answers. And she didn't like that as much as I thought. This but we started doing that. And, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm like, you know, if I start something, I've got to finish it. Like it doesn't matter if no one's listening. It's like, I started it. I said I was going to go to here. So we got 100 episodes in. And I was listening to all the gurus. You must do 5 hours a day and you must do it every day. And if you're not having all of this engagement, then you're failing and all of this, right? And we weren't getting any engagement. We got to 100 episodes of a daily podcast. So I started out doing this 5 days a week. And you guys both can appreciate how much work that is when you have no idea what you're doing. Yeah. And I got to 100 and I said, I'm not getting anybody talking. Yeah, I said, nobody's listening. I don't think, you know, I'm not growing anything. So I was going to shut it down. I actually announced on my 100th episode, I said, this is going to be my last episode. And right after that, we started getting emails and people engaging. And I said, okay, let's just do what Bruce does. So I went to once a week and I said, I'm going to do it once a week. And as we get more sponsors or whatever, we're going to start growing the show. We're now at 3 days a week as our main episodes. And then we have some sponsor highlights in between there. And so basically it's a daily show now, but it's a daily show based on the way I allowed to work. And we're at what, 600 and I think we hit 630 episodes this week.
Wow. What a great
wow,
success.
Congratulations.
Thank
well
you.
Done, man.
It's a lot of work. You guys know, right? I don't have to tell you guys how much.
Oh my
God. It looks easy,
you know what?
But it's a lot of work.
Job.
Yeah.
You do it. And Rico, I think you'll agree. You only do it for one reason, because you love doing it. That's the only reason people do this.
We didn't monetize for 2 years. We were doing it for two or three. We did it for two years without any monetization before we had any sponsors or anything. We didn't even ask anybody. And people go, how'd you monetize? I say, go buy a car. So I got a good story for you guys. My wife, I didn't realize this. So my wife and I, we both met at the chemical company. So we worked at the same place.
Right.
So we had one car, and then came off the road, started my own business. We went to two cars. Those cars were done. They were 5 years. You know, we paid for them and everything. The ink was not dry, and she was at the Chrysler dealership to buy another car. And I did not know about it, right? And so now she buys a leased Jeep. She buys a Jeep and comes home, and so now we're 5 years ahead. My car is now 10 years old. Hers is 5 years, this lease, and the lease is up. And I go, you know me being the man, I said, don't worry, I will save you, honey. I'm going to come with you to the dealership to make sure that you do not get ripped into another deal and end up with another lease for 5 years, because she like bought it on her lunch hour, right? I go there. My car's 10 years old. Her lease is up. And the guy says, boy, have I got a deal for you. I can give you two Jeeps. And I go, what? Two Jeeps? He goes, yeah, and I'm going to give you 25% off each one. Well, if you're sitting outside with a 10-year-old car, and she had a car that has to be turned in or basically pay the same for it, so we took it. And I'm looking at, and you know, the funny thing is we're giving them, you know, they ask for all your income information. I'm going,
of course,
we're not going to get this. Like, I'm a gig artist, right? Like, you know, I do weddings. I'm looking at the calendar. There's nothing in the calendar for the next month. And I'm going, oh, I'm going to get turned down. So we're giving him the stuff. The first call, he says, yep, sorry, you got turned down. A sigh of relief, like, oh, great, finally, I got turned. 2 seconds later, he reveals, he says, you got to prove it. I go, oh, man. So all the way home, you know how you should be excited? I'm like, how am I going to pay for two flipping cars? Like, that's, you know, my wife at that time, I think she had like a year and then she was retiring. And I'm going, how am I going to do this? And so I said, okay, I've been paying for this podcast for 2 years, not asked a soul for a penny. I just dialed up 27 people I know. And I said, listen, I'm offering sponsorships for X number of dollars. Who wants in? And I had 8 of them sign up. For a year. I said, you sign up for a year, I'll give you a month off. So they signed up for a year. You know what? That paid our first friggin' payment. And now we've grown after that. We've created packages and gone up in price, but I still have many of those ones that started with us are still with us today.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I don't know. Chuck, you and I were kind of talking about this the other day. It depends on the person you are. I'm that kind of person. When I'm under the gun is when it lights up and it's like, okay, let's get this movie.
Yeah.
If I've got tons, like if I'm a millionaire, I'm not good. I'm just laying around the pool. I'm not doing nothing, right? But if I know that I got to pay the rent next week or whatever, boy, you should see a guy get into gear like you've never. And I think that's old school trucking. You know, you got to get it done, right? And that's how I was brought up, to you get it done.
Well,
you don't back out
if
on your
bill, remember.
You get it done.
Yeah. If you remember, if you were on your way to the coast and you were dogging it, and you were stopping at all the truck stops and playing pinball or Donkey Kong or whatever, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, my God, I've blown a day. I'm a day behind. All of a sudden, you did some serious trucking to make up for it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I've always been very determined in my career. You know, like I'm going to be there. I've got a good name of being on time and all those kind of things. And it's helped me in my career. So I'm glad that they worked out the way they did.
Well, you know what? Things work out because a lot of times the people that have things work out for them really engineered it that way. They did the extra work, they did the heavy lifting, and they were successful as a result. There's no magic bullet, you know.
Nope.
Sometimes somebody will get lucky and they will win a lottery. That does happen, or something like that. Or, you know, somebody in the trucking business will meet somebody that's got a gazillion loads that they can give them at great rates. But those are one in a million stories. The rest of the people... they have to work, and they have to work really hard, especially in the trucking business, and watch their money in order to make a go of it. There's no other way to do it in our business. You know, you have to watch your
pants. And I'm glad I never did it any other way, because it's been a lot of fun. I've got a good name in the industry because of the way. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but I've been out of the truck for 14 years, and I've been hired by my old companies to go back and teach a safety meeting or teach. So, you know, you can't do that if you don't have a good name in the industry and with your company, right? So it's always important to be as professional. I've gotten lots of good loads. I've had lots of good opportunities. I did a lot of dedicated freight over my years. A lot of hazmat is where I basically sat. So, you know, you can't do that if you're kind of a sloppy driver. You have to be fairly professional to do that, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. You've got to be right on your game because, first of all, when you have hazmat stickers on your trailer, good chance you're going to get pulled in. They want to see what you're hauling and make sure that your paperwork is in order. And if your paperwork isn't in order, you're getting a ticket. You might only do that once. You'll never do it again. So those are usually, as a rule, the best drivers on the road are the men and women hauling hazmat. I don't think they get enough.
And it got
credit.
It got me into a good company, and that good company gave me good training, which I'm still using to this day, doing what I'm doing. So I always tell drivers, I go, keep upgrading yourself, keep trying to be professional. You know, when they're looking for people for specialty projects, they're not looking at those people who are not on time and don't keep their trucks clean and, you know, don't care about what's going on. They're looking for the people who are in what I call the top 20% of a fleet. And that's, you know, if people can do that and think like that, not that you have to brown nose to get up there, but if you work hard and you're, you know, in trucking, it's about being safe, being on time, not that you can't make a mistake. We've all made mistakes, but, you know, if you do all of those things, you will have a successful career, and you will always make money in this industry. I've never not made money in this industry, whether I was behind the wheel or not. Like, I've always made a good paycheck. I've worked for good companies, both private and and, you know, for hire carriers. And I've always drive the big iron and all of that stuff. You know, I look back and all my old trucks were Pete's and big Freightliners and the whole bit. So it's been a fun career.
You know, it's funny. This isn't surprising at all, because you, when people do things right, it just follows them. Okay, you did things right. You presented yourself well. I'm sure you kept your equipment good. You had a good driving record. The better companies are willing to pay for those people,
yep.
And that's the difference. Yep. And I hate to use the term, but you're. You know, when you were in the business, you were a lot more than a steering wheel holder. You know, you were a guy that understood it and cared and went the extra mile. And that's something that I think we need to teach people coming into this industry, that especially if they're coming in as drivers, the whole thing about going the extra mile and being presentable and looking presentable. You know, I get calls sometimes for people want to come on as owner operators. And I got to tell you, when the first question they ask is, how much are you paying? You know what? The conversation's pretty much dead after that. Because although that's important, that's the least important. That will come out. I want to know about them. I want them to ask questions like, you know, what year do your trucks have to be? Where do you go? What sort of freight is it? Those are the questions that a professional asks. Not how much you pay.
It's funny because in my when I teach at the driving schools, that's exactly what I say. I say the how much you pay should be the very last question that you ask, if you even ask it at all, because it doesn't matter if you pay double what someone else does. If they sit you double the time, you're no further ahead. You're better off to work for somebody that I work for carriers. They're known as money making carriers. Not that they paid so much money, but they kept you moving. They had their thing down to a science where you weren't sitting around a lot waiting and delays. And, it didn't matter whether it was empty miles or full miles, you were still moving and making money. And, the professionalism, if you ever sit through one of my classes in a training school, you will hear me harp on trip planning. I still teach map reading. I still teach professionalism and dress and how to customer service. Those are all the things. And I applaud the bed bugger industry, as they call it, the moving industry, has got to be one of the best training grounds. I always tell young people, if you can take the moving furniture, get into that industry. I learned so much from being somebody who did not come from a trucking background to get in there. And I learned customer service. I learned how to run on percentage, be an owner operator. All of those things came out of the moving part of that industry. And it's, customer service is key in anything, whether you're moving or not.
Oh, my God, yeah. Because you are dealing. It's probably one of the only sectors of the for-hire industry that deals with the public.
Yep.
Where you're interfacing with the public, that's what you do. You're moving Mrs. Johnson's freight from Toronto to Idaho, and you're going to be talking to her. And you've got to be presentable. You can't look like, like you just crawled out of a hole or out of a sewer. You've got to be well-groomed, and you've got to be well-spoken. You've got to be organized.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of deadlines in that area. Yeah, a lot of deadlines in that industry. You know, people get their keys at 4 o'clock. They don't want you showing up the next day. You're showing up at 4:01 because they want to have the stuff in there. And it's a lot of timing and stuff. I just found it fascinating. And my first, I tell people my first experience at the border, Border Patrol ripped apart our trailer 6 hours at the border. We had to repack it again because they went through whoever's freight we had on at the same time. One of my first trips was to New York City, got stuck under a bridge. There's all kinds of stories. I could have been deterred away from the industry, and it was just I didn't know any better, so that was a learning curve, and I know not to do it again. But
ignorance bliss.
Yeah, and that's before air ride when you had to let the air out of the tires to get your trailer under the bridge. Rico, are you still there? Rico,
man.
I'm
still here. Sometimes, sometimes, as the old saying goes, sometimes you just got to sit back. God gave you 2 ears and 2 eyes for a reason and 1 mouth. So, sometimes you just have to sit back and observe and listen to what the stories that are going on. You might be able to pick up something. You might be able to learn something. But you guys are definitely saying some things that as far as some of the things that we kind of harp on here on the show a lot, that when we're talking with people is, your attitude about, the way the outlook that you see things. Even though you may be having a hard go at it or whatever, but if you know how to treat the customer, or if you know how to turn a situation instead of letting it be a bad situation, if you know how to turn it around and make it an advantage for yourself, it has a way of always rewarding you, and that's some of the things that we definitely love to talk about here on the show.
I know you're used to being in the background because I've heard Hank and them on your show too. You guys get into some serious, serious conversations.
Well, it really all
now with Hank and Tommy on.
Oh my
you just sit back and enjoy the show because that in itself between those two guys is just so damn fascinating. It's always a hoot when those two get together.
Yeah,
it is a lot of fun. And there's another guy. Do you know David Owens, who is the co-founder of Nastic? Have you ever spoken to him?
No, I know the name though, but I don't know him personally.
Okay, so we've had David Owens on a few times, and Rico and I are both members of Nastic, great organization. David Owens came on one night with Hank Seaton and Tommy Rook. And oh my God, I thought that was
fun. When the host leaves the show.
Yeah, Rico and I were going to go out for coffee.
Yeah, you may as well.
Well, we couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Kind of like this show. It's already 20 to 8. Like, do we have a topic? I don't even know if we had a topic. Like, it's 20 to 8. Chuck, this happened the last time. We were delving into our topic when we were like 2 minutes closing out the show.
I think we were talking about the how to address the driver shortage and bring attract younger people behind the wheel of a truck, because right now.
So I saw.
There's nothing sexy about it for them.
I solved the problem today. I interviewed a young guy, 30 years old, from Atlanta, Georgia. His name is Mike Helms. I'm not going to tell you the company because I think he deals similar to what you do, so I don't want to put any competition there.
Right.
But bright, bright guy. And he reached out to me. His team reached out to me. I didn't know who he was. We had a conversation today that I thought was just – If we're not adopting that, then we're missing something. And I think maybe the young people are doing it on other platforms that we're not familiar with. So the way he got into the box truck market. Are you guys familiar with that? You know that right now it's hot. We hear that in the U.S. I never hear that in Canada. Box truck, but basically
straight
the
trucks,
expedite
right.
division.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight truck, 26 feet or smaller. We call it expedite, but down in the States they call it box truck. And a lot
and
of people
California,
started
this
up in the pandemic.
Trucks.
Right, okay. So
yeah,
what they're doing, and there's been a lot of contracts with Amazon, apparently, that
right.
have gotten a lot
yep.
of people who are not used to trucking into the industry. And now, and then they upgrade. So they start off with a van or whatever, running a, and now this guy started the same way. He built it up to 12 box trucks, and then he moved into semi-trailers, and now he's helping people become owner-operators and do all of that kind of stuff. But you know, the thing that really caught me was the language he was using. He was using things like investment. Now, Chuck, you and I have been in Canada for a long time. When was the last time you heard about somebody investing in the trucking industry? It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Nobody talks like that.
You're right, but
he was telling people that if you have $50,000 or something like that, you can invest in the industry. Basically, you can become an owner of a truck, but he did all of the hiring and all of the stuff with it. Like, you didn't have to do anything. He wanted you to be educated.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not saying that's a model that maybe we should get into, but he made it. He was positive. He's made a good living doing this. He's built up his fleet to something like 20 trucks, and he's all excited. He's 30 years old, and he's been in the industry 6 years. So, you know, this is what is he doing? I don't know if you heard about the women. There's a girl driver who's been on the news a bit here, who's been on TikTok, and she's been showing her life on TikTok. And a lot of other women are interested that are young are interested in getting into trucking because they see her on TikTok. And I'm not on TikTok. Maybe I need to be. But you know, it's like, okay, maybe there's a way there of getting people into. I know this whole thing in the States that you guys have been talking about. 18-year-olds driving trucks, and this is why I
yep.
called in Rico the other night. Rico, I was on the line. Boy, I had some things to say, but Hank was saying a lot of stuff. Hank and Tommy, I didn't get it. I didn't get any room in there. I hung up about 10 minutes. Actually, no, that particular I called in a couple times, but that one the show ended when you said goodbye. I knew I wasn't going to get my time. So
I apologize.
No, it's funny, but you guys were talking about, you know, the people who are 18 driving in the industry, and I know in the States that's a big topic. It's been a topic of conversation up here in Canada, and I was phoning in to say, yes, we can do it, because I started driving at 18. I started with straight trucks. At 21 is when I got my tractor-trailer license,
right.
And why are we not bringing in 18-year-olds to at least work regional or around the city, or at least getting them involved in the industry? They don't have to stay there forever, but if they start seeing some money, and then they know that the reason I moved up in the industry, I started as a lumper with Atlas Van Lines, and I noticed that the driver was not lifting as much as me, getting paid double as me, and he was the boss. Well, I think I want to be the driver next time. So that's how it worked. And we're not showing people that. The young people have no – we got programs here in Canada like the Road Knights that go to schools and talk about the trucking industry. But if you're 18 and you can't get into the industry till you're 25 because of insurance reasons, I'm not sitting around for 7 years to make 50 grand. I'll make 50 grand somewhere else. That's our problem.
Exactly.
Why are we not getting them in at 18? You should be able to go get your license, and yes, maybe you're restricted where you can only drive within a 100-mile radius, but at 16, people are driving anyway. You know, we've had some bad accidents of 17-year-olds here. Yes, but I think they've got some proper training and some proper guidance, which you can get at a carrier that says, okay, you're 18, you can only run within the province of Ontario, but you can still drive to Ottawa, and you have a carrier that's still caring about, you know, their safety records, so they're going to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're getting educated, and you're getting educated with stuff that can take you 40 years down the road. You will be doing something like we're doing without being in the truck. Why are we not? Nobody's showing that. Between that and being skilled trade, I think it's going to solve our problems, but I don't know why we're so slow in getting those things done.
And we don't have, you know what, we do not have the insurance restrictions like the U.S. does as far as, now, insurance is tight here, but it's not as
right.
nearly as restrictive, because we don't have the craziness from the legal society, or I don't even want to say legal profession, because I have a real hard time using those two words in the same sentence when it pertains to these scoundrels that are causing hell on earth with their billboards, you know, at the side of a highway, 1-800-SUE-A-TRUCKER. That's not professional.
Yeah.
I don't think that
right.
that's part of the world's noble profession. You know, this is you know, this is just some sort of sidebar. But we don't have that in Canada. So I think we have a much better market. And look at the size of Ontario. My God, you could drive for almost three days to get out of Ontario with a truck.
Yep.
By the time the Quebec-Ontario border to the Manitoba border, it's over 2 days. Not quite three, but it's over two. And if you have a heavy load or any bad weather, or you get behind a Honda Civic pulling a 36-foot cabin cruiser on. Rico, I'm not joking. The transfer of the highway going through Ontario, a lot of it, this is our major thoroughfare to join Canada, and a lot of it is two lane. I'm not exaggerating.
You're gonna make him think we still got moose cross in the road, and we do.
Well, we do something.
You know what? Though I did some training the other day, and I did two different training schools over the last 3 months. One class, the girl was she had wanted to be in the trucking industry 6 years before. She was 19 years old when she's taking this class. She was all excited that she could get in to do that. Her dad, and she was South Asian descent, so she was not, you know, the farm kid from the farm. She was from India or wherever, and she was all excited. Her dad had been a truck driver. She had been in the truck. She was all excited, 19 years old, and she's taking a training school here in Ontario. And then I had another one where the guy was in it, and he's just always been around it. And just always loved it, but wasn't old enough. So I think we do have some young people who are interested in the trucking industry. They don't see the opportunity. We need to be able to show them the opportunity. And our marketing is terrible in the trucking industry as far as how to get in. You know, it's all about just drive for another 50 years and you'll be fine. There's no career path. There's no skilled trade to say, if you take all of these courses after 5 years of driving with certain courses, you can become this, this, or this. plus the owner-operator business opportunities which are out there, which are fabulous if somebody wants to actually get serious with it. But yep. we don't show any of that. We just say, get in the truck. We throw them into a tractor trailer. We want to make sure they have enough to drive, and then that's it. We don't tell them anymore. So they think that this is their life, and it's not their life. You know, there's so many people I know that started in the seat but haven't, you know, they're not doing that anymore.
Yeah. You know what? And the seat isn't for everybody all of the time, you know, and it certainly had a totally different attraction for me when I was 21 years old. Now, I still love to get behind the wheel now and then, but I actually like to do it on my terms. You know, there's nobody dispatching me in a snowstorm or knowing that the 401 is a mess halfway, you know, in between here and Windsor over by London. There's nobody forcing me. I can do what I want when I want to because I own the company and I'm not doing it for a living. Where right. the men and women that are out there pounding pavement every day, keeping schedules, they have no choice. You know, there could be 14 inches of snow, they're going, you know, and no matter what, they can't allow that customer to shut down, whether it's automotive, but even food customers, there's fines attached. People don't often realize that we have to meet schedules, and sometimes not all shippers work with us to meet those scheduled delivery times.
Yeah, but I also know a lot of owner. Yeah, I also know a lot of owner operators though who own. They're either, you know, own authority or they're owner operators where they can run when they want to. And even in the moving industry, when I was in the moving industry, most owner operators shut their trucks down in January. You ran until December.
Well, pretty dead, yeah.
There was no freight. There was nothing happening from January to March. So they would shut their trucks down, not even take a load. They would go on vacation and then they would come back. So they'd run hard all summer. Now it's a bit different, but I know a lot of owner operators who, they run two trips a week. They just run Chicago twice a week. They're done Thursday night, and that is it for them. They take a three-day weekend every weekend. I know some that just shut down over the summer, and they just go to the farm or wherever they go for 2 months, and then they come back and run. And so, yes, there's a lot of times when you cannot shut down, when you have to go. But I think, like any business, if you've done it properly, by the time you get to that 15-year mark where you're kind of either an owner-operator or maybe you've gone into some other sector of the business, you're probably at a point where you can at least start getting back some of your time. And I think when you're 20 to 35 is when you should be working as many hours as you can and learning what you can. When you're 55 is when you should be slowing down. And, you know, this is the reason I'm not on the road anymore, because I like to go away to the Caribbean in the wintertime and all those kind of things. Sure. I can't do that. The company would have to give me 2 months off a year. They're not going to do it, right? So yeah. I can't even get hired anymore. I'm unhireable right now. But look at us. Look at us. We're all sitting here talking about that, and we're all in spaces that we're doing our own thing. But how many of us have shown that to the young people coming in and go, yeah, you need to work hard. We've all done our time, right? You guys have all done your time. 25, 30 years, whatever it was, we've done our time where we've worked weekends and times and missed birthday parties and all that stuff. But look at us now. We're all pretty well enjoying ourselves. We're on a podcast at night. We're having fun, right? So I think we've had a good career. I think we need to kind of somehow show people that. I think we're missing the ball with these new people, and we keep going on about this recruiting show, and now they hear about autonomous trucks, so now they're going, well, why would I even bother? Even I hear that from some of the schools. They go, we know we're going to be out of business in 15 years. So if that's the mentality of the industry, why is anybody going to come in? I wouldn't come in. I'm going to go, you know, go somewhere else.
Exactly. You know what, though? As you and I talked briefly, there – trucks are becoming more and more autonomous, but you will always need somebody behind the wheel. And they are going to get easier to drive between all of the sensors and the gauges and everything else, and automated transmissions or automatic transmissions and cruise control. It's simpler than the stuff we grew up with. It's a lot safer and it's a lot more comfortable. My God, I was... I took one of our new internationals. It's not new. It's a 2017 ProStar, which isn't a, ProStar is not a Peterbilt. But, I took it out for a short trip. My God. And I had my wife with me. And it was like sitting in the in the lap of luxury in that car, in that truck. It was incredible. It was like being in a nice, you know, in like a big Cadillac or something, except you're sitting up high. You know, you weren't, you didn't feel the vibration of the road or anything, and they're quiet. You know, what
I found that, I found that a problem taking your wife somewhere in a truck. I took my wife to the Fergus truck. Remember the Fergus truck show? I took my wife to the Fergus truck show. She saw the Lacey Dalton truck with the hot tub inside the sleeper. She said, "I want that one." I never took her to another show again. I said, "No, that's not what we get." Yeah. You got to be careful where you take them. They want all those big trucks. And I go, no.
Well, you know, some of the guys really, really do these trucks up where you're not going to, you know, it's quite an expense. It's just an expensive toy. You could never work it because it'd be too damn heavy. Some of them have chrome fifth wheels. You never want to put a, you know, put a greasy trailer pin on that thing.
I know. Nice to look
Oh, yeah. We were looking at some glider kits the other night in the truck paper. And, my God, there was one that was for sale in New York State. And I think it was in Endicott, New York. And I think it was just under $300,000. It had like well, it's not a, you know what? You may as well go and buy a painting, except it's going to use up a lot more room in your driveway because you're not going to pull any freight with it. It's, I think the thing was like 350-inch wheelbase. It was crazy. You know, what are you going to do with this thing?
It just shows you how much money can be made in this industry that you need a write-off for $300,000.
Yeah, good point. And I guess, you know, it's, if you've got a lot of money, you can take it around to shows. But I think I don't know, I think to a lot of people, when they see, you know, the people that are in the industry, I think when they see something like that, they just shake their heads. That's a wanton waste of money. That's how I look at it anyways.
It is, but it's not my money.
Right,
I like looking at them at the show, so I'm okay with it. Rico's going.
Well,
I
gentlemen, I'm looking at the time, and we don't blue through that hour. We.
I told you, Rico. I warned
Surprise.
You. So, Bruce,
we
have to get an opportunity to absolutely, we definitely would love to have you back, but we want to give you an opportunity to tell everybody how they can find you, how they can tune into your show, and you know, any information that you'd like to leave with us, we definitely would love to have it. But the floor is yours, my friend.
I think I have lots of websites, so I think the easiest one is just theleadpedalpodcast.com. If you go there, it goes to the radio station, fan club, whatever, and we've got links there to Instagram and Twitter and all those places where we are. So that's probably the easiest way to start. Chuck and I are connected on Instagram. We see each other there all the time. So that's where we trade messages and little videos. So I must say, though, that the lead is differently spelled. It's LEAD, just so people know,
right,
because it's a little play on words. It's
right.
not I know it's different spelling. I just want to say thank
all
you
right,
for having me
right.
on. You guys have been awesome. You guys have been awesome.
No, we appreciate you for taking time.
We'll have to do this again. We need to do a 4-hour show. we should bring Hank and Tommy on and do a marathon podcast. We should do like 8 hours. I'm sure we would.
Oh, my God.
I have no problem.
Okay. You know what?
We might just do that. Marathon Monday or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It definitely would be possible with a couple of those cast of characters.
Rico's going, I didn't have to say a thing all night.
Well, Chuck, my friend, you know what time it is. Let the good people know how they can get in contact with you if they need to, if anything that you guys can do to help them out up in traffic.
Okay. Yeah, if anybody needs to get set up with traffics or they need some advice on trucking or anything else, please reach out to me. You can send me an email, Chuck at traffic, traffix.com, or you can give me a buzz. My extension is 203. Phone number is 800-388-4352. You've got to have that extension, 203. You can send me a private message on Instagram at Chuck Snow CEO.
And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we definitely appreciate our guest Bruce for coming on and joining us. But most of all, we definitely appreciate you guys, the listeners, that took time to hang out with us. Whether you're listening live or you're listening to a download, you could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us, and we're eternally grateful for that. So until the next time, we want you guys to be safe out there, everybody. God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk at you next week.
Catch you on the flip-flop.